Good morning, and thank you for joining me on the Path to Liberty. I'm Michael Bolden with the 10th Amendment Center, and this is the show for Monday, March 27th, 2023. And I think we've got just another example of they sure don't make them like they used to. As we kind of teeter on the edge of another major economic crisis, I would, of course, argue that we're already in the midst of the next recession, even though, of course, they don't want to call it that. Not enough attention is really paid to one of the biggest culprits in government when it comes to economic policy and the problems we face, and that is the Secretary of the Treasury. And I'm not just talking about Janet Yellen. She's the current one, but I think she's very indicative of the mindset and the approach of all modern secretaries in this role. So I want to do a comparison, just a brief overview comparison of some of the main views on some big issues and with some quotes from themselves. Between Janet and one of the early secretaries of the Treasury, Albert Gallatin, who served in the role under both Presidents Thomas Jefferson and James Madison. I think the difference becomes very, very stark very quickly. So just a quick overview to start out. Here from Wikipedia describing the role, the United States Secretary of the Treasury is the head of the United States Department of the Treasury and is the chief financial officer, the CFO, of the federal government of the United States. The Secretary of the Treasury serves as the principal advisor to the President of the United States on all matters pertaining to economic and fiscal policy. This is, we live in the age, of course, of listen to the experts, and they've been listening to the experts for a long, long time, and we keep living through this boom-bust cycle that is destroying lives and acting like a massive transfer of wealth from the middle class to, well, the people who hold power and influence. So that's just a brief overview of what the office is. Here's how the Department of Treasury actually describes the role of the Secretary of the Treasury. That's Janet Yellen today. The Secretary is responsible for formulating and recommending domestic and international financial, economic, and tax policy, participating in the formulation of broad fiscal policies that have general significance for the economy, and managing the public debt. I mean, all we have to do is read the description. And we know that the public debt is not managed whatsoever, so that's a complete fail. But we'll go a little further here. The Secretary oversees the activities of the Treasury Department in carrying out her major law enforcement responsibilities, in serving as the financial agent for the U.S. government, and in manufacturing coins and currency. Interesting. Here's Janet Yellen, who served in the role since January 26th, 2021. Previously, she was the 15th chair of the Federal Reserve from 2014 through 2018. If you want to get an understanding of where she is, the big banker, she is the first person to hold these positions, having also led the White House Council of Economic Advisors and the first woman to hold either post. I think it's pretty significant, at least on as far as social issues, but that doesn't mean her policies don't absolutely suck. In the other corner, we've got Albert Gallatin, who was, I believe he was the fourth one in the role. The first one was Alexander Hamilton. Gallatin was not a fan. There was an interim one for a couple of months before him as well. He was the longest serving in the role. I don't think anyone has actually ever topped him. Just under 13 years, again, under Presidents Thomas Jefferson and James Madison. Now, in the years prior to becoming secretary, we know Yellen was the head of the unconstitutional Federal Reserve. On the other hand, Albert Gallatin was opposing the whiskey tax of 1791, vehemently opposing it. He was kind of a moderating force in the whole rebellion, but he was in opposition to this internal tax. And here he drafted something called the Petition Against the Excise Tax. I believe it was in 1792. He said this law, he considers this law, or the petitioners consider this law, as dangerous to liberty. So an internal tax, an excise on alcohol, on spirits, on whiskey, was dangerous to liberty. Taxation, dangerous to liberty. Because the powers necessarily vested in the officers for the collection of so odious a revenue are not only unusual, but incompatible with the free enjoyment of domestic peace and private property. So to tax, do lay an internal tax on the sale and production of a product as important to, at least in Western Pennsylvania and some other areas, as whiskey and other spirits, was considered to be odious. It was incompatible with freedom, really. He continues and he says, we are apprehensive that this excise will by degree. And of course, if you understood the views of the founders and old revolutionaries, this next line isn't going to be surprising at all, because the great concern isn't always just whether or not your government is doing the right thing and treating you well at a particular time. It's always with a view to the future. If you give them the power to do this today, what can it be built upon to become? Where can it go? So if you turn a blind eye to something that you see as not a really a big deal because it doesn't impact you so much, you shouldn't be surprised that in the future, if you haven't looked at it well, in the future, someone who absolutely hates your freedom might use that power even further and further and further. They always build upon it. The detestable precedent is what the penman of the revolution, John Dickinson, called compliance with the Stamp Act. Because some people even at that time were saying, well, why do we want to stick our necks out for such a small tax? Because once you establish that precedent, you know they're going to build upon it. And Gallatin is saying the same thing here as well. We are apprehensive that this excise, this new tax, not a stamp tax, but a whiskey tax, we are apprehensive that this excise will by degrees be extended to other articles of consumption until everything we eat, drink, or wear be, as in England and other European countries, subjected to heavy duties and the obnoxious inspection of a host of officers. Wow, he called it, because what do we have today that doesn't have to go through all kinds of government regulations, inspections, rules, etc., that crowd out competition to the large corporations that back them? What do we have today that we can get tax-free in a trade? Almost nothing, really. And maybe that's an understatement. But he's basically saying if you allow this kind of internal tax, eventually they're going to expand this to anything and everything. Anyways, here from Michael Hoover. This is some government website. They point out that he was very popular because of this. He was very popular because of his opposition to the whiskey tax, and he was elected to Congress. From my understand, he wasn't even technically running for office at all. It was kind of brought to him by surprise, but he won the election. And so in Congress, Gallatin worked for a more exact accounting of the federal government's finances, leading President Thomas Jefferson to appoint him Secretary of the Treasury, a post he also held under James Madison. And here from James Blake Weiner at the Swiss National Museum, they call him, because he's of Swiss heritage, they call him Swiss Founding Father. So Jefferson wrote in his private notes that Gallatin was, quote, the only man in the United States who understands, through all the labyrinths Hamilton involved it, the precise state of the Treasury. So Jefferson, we know, was no fan of the Hamiltonian mercantilist kind of run of the Treasury. And he understood that Gallatin was well aware of what was going on. He was an expert in this field. And he wrote in his notes that this is the only guy that can come in after the mess that was made and unwind some of the problems that we have. And James goes on. He says, Jefferson was correct. Gallatin meticulously pursued fiscal policies that would rein in government expenditures, curb excessive military spending, and lower the national debt. When have you heard of a Secretary of the Treasury in modern times warn about military spending, saying we got to cut back? And in fact, if you spend too much, and I don't actually have some of the quotes in some detail, but as you read through more and more of this, of course, I'm going to link to these in the show notes. I will mention where you can get all that in just a moment. But as you read through some of his letters, you see him talking about things like, well, we don't want to spend too, of course, we want to be strong for our defense, but if we spend too much, you're basically tempting them to use it. And you're going to create a scenario where they're going to take you into unconstitutional foreign wars and things against our policy of peace and prosperity and trade, etc. Of course, he was part of the Jefferson administration, so that was a heavy priority. And of course, they always wanted to lower the debt, lower the debt. Here from a very interesting book. I've only read excerpts of this, but you can get some excerpts online for free. Thomas McGraw, The Founders and Finance. His good friend, so Gallatin's good friend, John Randolph of Virginia, was chair of the House Ways and Means Committee, so spending and stuff. And the second ranking member of that committee was a cousin of Gallatin's wife, Hannah. So in cooperation, Thomas writes, with these two congressmen, Gallatin easily secured the administration's first policy, legislation providing for reduction and, in most cases, abolition of internal federal taxes, including the hated excise on whiskey. So they got rid of the whiskey tax. They reduced or completely eliminated other internal federal taxes. And this was part of the policy of the administration. Jefferson brought him in there primarily or heavily for that and to address the debt. Because, well, it's totally opposite of what we have today, which is just more and more of all that garbage. And wait till you... Well, it's pretty fascinating. Going further, he writes, he also steered the Committee on Ways and Means towards reducing federal expenditures because you can't deal with problems like debt and, we'll say, inflation. They didn't call it that at that time. They called it depreciation. When you can't deal with these things without reducing government spending, if you keep government spending at the same level or increased, you're never going to change the problem that you face. So he won relatively easy approval in the reduction of federal expenditures as well. Here in a letter to Thomas Jefferson, this is in November of 1801. Now, 1801, this is his not less than a year in the role of Secretary of Treasury. And here's how Gallatin put it. If this administration shall not reduce taxes, they never will be permanently reduced. So it was incumbent on them to reduce or completely eliminate taxes. Jefferson wanted this, and Gallatin was the guy to make it happen, to work with the powerful committee chair and number two in Ways and Means. Gallatin says to strike at the root of the evil. Again, remember that he's calling internal taxes not just a bad idea or a bad policy, bad for economics, but evil. There's a moral opposition to this as well. To strike at the root of the evil and avert the danger of increasing taxes, encroaching government, temptations to offensive wars. That's just a brief hint of what he talks about over and over and over. Cut back spending, cut back the taxes because you don't want the temptation for government to use this power to do stuff. So to strike at the root of the evil and avert the danger of increasing taxes, encroaching government, temptations to offensive wars, etc., nothing can be more effectual than a repeal of all internal taxes. Let them all go, and not one remain on which sister taxes may be hereafter engrafted. So he's pushing even Jefferson to say, we got to get rid of all of it. On the other hand, here's our current one, Janet Yellen, which just last fall, here's a headline from Bloomberg. Yellen renews calls for tax hikes on the rich and social spending boost. So you've got someone like Gallatin who's saying, get rid of all internal taxes completely, 100%, because if you have any, they're going to expand it to everything eventually. And at the same time, you got to cut spending. You got to get rid of debt. You got to reduce the spending. And here on the opposite end of the spectrum, you're getting a call for an increase in taxes on some people and then spending like crazy all the time. Or instead, here she is professing her love for the IRS. What was the date on this one? This was just September 15th, 2022. It's from their website. She said, as our nation's revenue collection agency, the IRS is a foundation of our government and society. I mean, for Janet Yellen, taxation and the collection, the armed collection agents who are after you to collect that stuff, this is the foundation of society. Taxation is society to her. The IRS, she said, collects 96% of the revenue that funds the federal government, supporting our priorities from national security to infrastructure to Social Security. It is also one of the very few parts of the federal government that touches nearly every American household. Now, you go from Gallatin, who's referring to this kind of stuff as an evil, bad policy, but morally bad as well. But at the same time, and something that leads to temptation of all kinds of other bad stuff as well. Madison at one point referred to a war as the greatest threat to public liberty because it's the parent of everything else. Armies, debts, and taxes. And armies and debts and taxes are the known instruments to James Madison for putting the many under the domination of the few. And you can see this type of a viewpoint coming through in Albert Gallatin's writings as well. But on the other hand, you have somebody today, and I wouldn't think that anyone else is much different, not much variance on this at all, but Janet Yellen's basically literally in love with the IRS as the foundation of our entire society or a foundation. A very important part is taxes. So here from September 12th, 1805, talking a little bit more on that foreign policy view and just touching on it briefly. Here's how Gallatin put it, talking about Napoleon. He said, if Bonaparte, haughty and obstinate as he is, shall think proper to preserve, to persevere, notwithstanding our taking Florida, then our fate becomes linked to that of England, and the conditions of our peace will depend on the general result of the European war. So you don't want to be attached to one side or another in a European war, is what he's saying. He said, and this is one of the worst evils, again, using that term evil, not just bad policy, but again, an evil, one of the worst evils which the United States could encounter. For an entangling alliance, undefined debts and taxes, and in a fine, a subversion of all our hopes must be the natural consequence. So you don't want to just link yourself to sides of a European war. And I know someone's going to know where I'm going to go with that one pretty soon as well. And he also points out here in another letter, oh, this is actually the same letter. He said, it is even proper to recollect that as the power of making war is constitutionally vested in the Congress, the making war is vested in the executive, declaring war in the Congress and making or waging war is the executive. It is the duty of the executive to leave it so substantially and to do no act which may put the peace of the country in jeopardy. Man, did I torture that. I'm sorry about that. I'm trying to like just go with the highlights rather than reading the long paragraph that goes with the context, and now I just end up blabbing for the whole time anyway. So he's basically saying, since the executive has so much power when it comes to making, waging war, it's important that the executive does nothing that might create an instance of war. Just be very cautious about these types of things. Don't get involved in everybody else's stuff. This is a serious problem. As he mentioned previously, this getting attached to one side or another in an entangling alliance in a European war is one of the greatest evils. And here he is one more time. This is in a letter to Joseph Nicholson in July of 1807. The greatest mischiefs which I apprehend from the war are the necessary increase of executive power. Madison talked about that as well, talking about how in war, the power of the executive increases. It's just what happens. And he said, and influence, the power and influence of the executive, the speculations of contractors and jobbers, and the introduction of permanent military and naval establishments. Now, the Jefferson administration actually cut back on the size of the military. If you talk about doing that today, you're considered a bad person. But one of the most important founding fathers at the beginning of the Republic felt it was important to not spend too much because, well, it creates an environment where people with power, as Madison put it, the executive is the most prone to war. If you give them too many tools, they're going to find a way to use them. So that was the approach there. Now, on the other hand, here's Janet Yellen just in February of this year talking about providing assistance for Ukraine. She said, the United States is proud to be Ukraine's largest bilateral donor. Over the past year, we have provided close to $50 billion. $50 billion. When there's a debt that can't be serviced. We have provided close to $50 billion in security, economic, and humanitarian assistance. We're also proud to be joined by an international coalition of partners, including the EU and other members of the G7. I just thought that was an interesting contrast between the two. Now, I mentioned earlier that they don't actually talk about inflation when it comes to rising. Well, inflation, if we understand properly, is an increase in the money supply. Increase in the money supply, which drives an increase in prices. Today, they almost only talk about the increase in prices as being inflation instead of as the result of inflation, because then it deflects from who's the cause of the problem, the cause of the increased price. Because if you just say prices are going up, that's inflation, inflation's bad, well, who raised the prices and why? And if you don't understand the cause and consequences, you're never going to get it right. So back in the day, they referred to this instead as depreciation. And that makes a lot more sense to me, because what we're really talking about is not inflation in prices, it's a devaluing of your purchasing power. So if your dollar is only worth 5 cents and it's depreciated 95 cents, well, the government's the one that issued that dollar. What the hell happened and why is it worth so little? I don't want to necessarily blame my chicken farmer down the street for raising prices, because they also can't buy as much with their depreciated dollars. So Gallatin called depreciated and fluctuating currency a curse. That's in a letter to Thomas Jefferson in 1815. He also recognized, and I should mention actually here, I keep linking stuff, talking about stuff that I'm going to link to. About an hour to 2 hours after I finished the live stream, I published a blog post over at 10thamendmentcenter.com/path to liberty. And in that blog post, you're going to find a section that says show links. And I'm going to link to all these original source documents so you can read them in context, learn more, maybe get interested in more stuff from Gallatin and other people on your own time. Again, 10thamendmentcenter.com/path to liberty. And while I'm at it, I should say a quick hello over to everyone out in the live chat. I appreciate you guys being here. I hope you had an awesome weekend. I really am grateful for you spending a little bit of your Monday with me here today, or whenever you happen to be watching or listening. There's Connie over on LinkedIn, Haji on YouTube says Gallatin called it and accurately prophesied about the American future. Now, yeah, especially when it comes to how the precedent on one internal tax led to another and another and another. And this is despite the fact that they reduced or eliminated quite a few of them as well. There's also Cowboy Roy Rogers, Sharon Patriot, Alt Reality, Mad Mom, Dixie Strong 64, and everyone else. I appreciate you guys being here. Let's get back to this. Anyways, pulling up this next letter. This is to Nathaniel Macon in 1816. We're talking about depreciation, using it as a term, a reduction in the value of the purchasing power of the money, rather than blaming it on inflation on other people. There's always somebody else other than the people in power and government that are causing you to actually have to spend more money. Gallatin also recognized that depreciation, or what we call inflation, represented a tax on the people. You might hear good people when it comes to economics, like Peter Schiff, refer to inflation. Ron Paul also calls this pretty often the inflation tax, because they're not necessarily wanting to raise taxes to be able to pay more stuff. But if they print more money, they make more dollars available, and you have less purchasing power, they can get away with covering costs of stuff, but you're still paying for it. Because every time you go to the gas pump or the grocery store, or you buy something for a friend online, in person, wherever, if you have to pay 10% more every year, 5% more over time, you are getting taxed for all the so-called government services that the printing and borrowing goes for. So he actually even here opposes a bit, it seems like, fractional reserve banking, which is, I'm not going to get into here, but basically instead of having, like, if you have a sound money system and you have a note that represents $100 worth of gold, you bring that $100 bill into wherever, to a bank, and they have to fully redeem, fully backed 100%. And if everybody shows up to get their deposits out at the same time, you can't have a bank run, because they are required to have 100% reserves in the bank. The only reason we see bank runs today is because of fractional reserve banking. Well, that's not the only reason, but one of the biggest problems, one that causes it to be, because if you have a run on a bank and they have all the loot in the bank, well, they may not have anything left as a foundation. And there obviously is a problem with the bank if everyone wants to take it out of there as well. But no one gets ripped off, left holding the bag in that situation. No one loses it, because what they do today, let's say, and I don't even think there really is a reserve requirement anymore, but let's say they only have to have a reserve requirement, just for easy numbers, of 10%. You deposit $100, they keep 10 there, and they use the other 90 to loan out. This is also bank credit, which does help increase the money supply and creates more price inflation as well. So Gallatin appears to oppose all of this. So he said here to Nathaniel Macon in 1816, so long as banks do not pay in specie, they may indeed, by issue of paper, increase their loans. So this is fractional reserve, because they're not having a one-to-one exchange ratio or fully backed exchange ratio to gold or silver. He said, but this is affected by depreciating the currency. In other words, by raising a tax on the community for the benefit of the banks and borrowers, and what is worse, by impairing the sanctity of contracts. So the idea of inflation, right, which results in price inflation or depreciating the currency, is ripping people off on a grand scale. Not only are you really taxing the community to pay for the benefit of the powerful people in government, to pay for government programs, but the banking situation as well. Why do we want to throw all our money at these banks? They're all buddies with the government anyways. Not only do you have that, but it also impairs the sanctity of contracts. If you and I have a contract that's for $100 to do a project, and all of a sudden that $100 is worth $50, I mean, certainly you get a really good deal, and maybe some people need to start thinking about these things as well. But if you get $50 down the line, you've done, well, twice the work, really, for half the price. Well, the same amount of work, you're only getting paid 50%. Even if it's 10%, 5%, this all damages and attacks or impairs the sanctity of contracts. Here in a letter to Robert Potter, December 3rd, 1830, which I'll cover again near the end of the show, he said, with a debased coinage or a fluctuating depreciated paper, you subvert every private and public engagement, impair the performance of every contract, might make invariably the ignorant and the weak dupes of the shrewd and wary, and demoralize the whole community. This is through depreciation of a currency or what we call inflation today. And he said, the suspension of specie payments and circulation of a depreciated currency are the general evil and the true injury to the community at large. And that's in 1841. Now, compare that to Janet Yellen, who was the Fed chair from 2014 to 2018. She did not personally oversee QE 1, 2, and 3, the quantitative easing, the massive printing that went behind. And she's the one who supposedly unwound the country from that, which is pretty absurd, but that's another episode. But she wasn't the head boss, but she was a champion of the policies, not only as the president of the San Francisco Fed, but she was also on the board of governors. She was the vice chair of the Fed for a while. So she has been involved in this money printing process quite a bit. And I've got this money M2 money supply chart up here. I will link to this in the show notes as well. You can Google it or a start page. You can find it all over the place. And you can see that everyone in modern times has massively increased the money supply. It's just what happens. Of course, it went up significantly after 2020, pretty sharply. But before that, the only reason it looks so sharp is because it was that insanely sharp in a short amount of time. But all the stuff before that was insanely bad as well. Now, how about a little bit on debt? Here from a letter to Thomas Jefferson, Albert Gallatin writes, the reduction of the public debt was certainly the principal object in bringing me into office. Reducing debt was the number one reason to have Albert Gallatin there. Was it the number one reason to have Janet Yellen? Of course not. He said, and our success in that respect has been due both to the joint and continued efforts of the several branches of government and to the prosperous situation of the country. So it does take a lot of work to reduce the debt, but it actually, everybody was kind, well, not everybody, but people were generally on board with reducing the debt. And that was the number one reason he was in the office. And in fact, anyone who is brought into this office today that isn't brought in to reduce the debt, to work out ways to reduce the debt, really, they're not on the side of anything we should be supporting. Here in a letter to Ezekiel Bacon, he said, neither a perpetual and increasing public debt nor a permanent system of ever-progressing taxation shall be entailed on the nation. That was the goal. No perpetual and increasing debt or progressing taxation, which is exactly what we have today. We have a perpetually increasing debt that can't be paid back. Eventually, things that can't go on forever don't. And we always have increasing taxation, even if they claim they're reducing taxes. Like the last administration, they had some reduction. But as long as they keep spending and printing, we're still getting increased taxation through inflation, even though it isn't a direct, it's very indirect in the way they tax. He said these evils, again, these are morally repugnant things, perpetual increasing debt and ever progressing taxation are evils. These evils cannot, however, be otherwise avoided than by the speedy organization of a certain revenue. So you have to have more revenue than you spend. On the other hand, we have Janet Yellen, who just last month in February demanded more debt. She's warning us that if they don't increase the debt ceiling, if you don't have more debt than what is authorized, than what they always do, which is raise it, raise it, raise it, if you don't have more debt, it's a bad thing to her, which is pretty wild. She said Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, this is from CBS News, warned Tuesday of potential economic catastrophe if Congress and the White House fail to take action to raise the federal debt ceiling. In the longer term, a default would raise the cost of borrowing into perpetuity. Future investments, including public investments, would become substantially more costly, as if the government's investments have been doing anything good in the first place. If the debt keeps getting worse, that's clearly a problem. And here she is just last week, it looks like, on the 22nd, talking about the federal budget. She said, this is to Congress, I think, some kind of letter or prepared statement. The president's fiscal year 2024 budget requests the necessary resources to continue advancing our nation's priorities. I highlight three imperatives. So these are the three important things to the however many countless amounts of dollars that they want to steal, print, and spend. First, $14 billion in discretionary resources for the IRS. So the number one priority in the budget is additional discretionary spending for tax collection. Again, we know that Janet Yellen sees taxation as the foundation of society, or a foundation of society and government. Without it, you can't do anything. And without those two, well, without taxation, so we always got to increase the taxation, always got to increase the collection, the enforcement, increase the size and scope and power of the IRS. That is right there. Number one, what she said just last week. Number two, of course, it's foreign policy and war. Our budget request shores up our capacity to respond to Russia's immoral war and advance other national security priorities. And number three, got to pad your own pocket. We are requesting $332 million for Treasury's departmental offices. So the three most important things that she highlighted is more money for the IRS, more money for foreign policy adventurism, and more money for themselves. Totally different than what Albert Gallatin said, which is really, really just get rid of all the spending, get rid of all the internal taxes. Here she is again talking about, I know you've heard this, she's reassuring us that our banking system is sound and that Americans can feel confident that their deposits will be there when they need them. If the banking system is supposedly sound today, I mean, we don't know what sound is. On the other hand, even back then, Albert Gallatin put it this way, and this is into that letter in 1830 to Robert Potter. He said, "I am no friend either to our banking system generally or to a paper currency of any kind." And he goes on to explain what he thinks the monetary system should be. He said, "Had I my choice, I would prefer a pure metallic currency." He called himself an ultra-bullionist. Ultra-bullionist. So, like, nothing even close to it. Always, all the time in support of a metallic currency. "I would prefer a pure metallic currency and private banking houses, as in London and on the continent of Europe, who might with perfect freedom receive money on deposit, discount notes, and deal in exchange, but not issue banknotes or in any respect interfere with the currency." And it's not that he was just in support of government printing money either. He said, "I would wish that governments should neither restrain them in the other respects nor grant them any privilege." So banks should be limited in this way, but it should be a market-based limitation, not government getting involved, not government getting in the way, not restrain them or giving them any special privileges. Totally opposite of what we have now. But he says, "I am equally averse to any issues of paper money by government." And by paper money, of course, they didn't have digital at the time. They're talking about fiat money, funny money with no backing. I call it dirty government fiat because that's what it is. It's dirty because it finances and funds the most powerful government in history. And, well, had we listened to Gallatin and Jefferson and many others, maybe Thomas Paine, this wouldn't be the mess that we have today. "I am equally averse to any issues of paper money by government, and still more so to its converting the Treasury into a banking trading company. This, I think, the very worst plan in every view of the subject that could be devised, and the remedy worse than any evils." So again, referring to this whole system, this fiat funny money, this basically this fractional reserve banking system, as an evil. Now, nothing helps us get this kind of information out to more and more people every single day more than the financial faith and support of our members. If you got a couple, I know they make it very difficult. As they depreciate the value of the purchasing power or the value of the currency of the money, well, the fake money, because it's not actually money, but as they reduce the power of the USD, it makes it more difficult. So don't feel any pressure to support us. But if you've got a couple of bucks of that dirty government fiat laying around, please consider throwing it our way over at 10thAmendmentCenter.com/members. I really appreciate any consideration you can give to supporting us today. We also have annual and lifetime and five-year options. And while I mention it, I do want to say a quick thank you. I haven't done this in a few weeks, been pretty busy, but I want to say thank you. There's been a bunch of people joined up lately, and I really, really appreciate you supporting us. Thank you goes out to Don in Pennsylvania, Christine in New York, Sean in California, Edward in Texas, Nora in Colorado, and Cheryl in California, and everyone else that I missed. I am so grateful for all of you. I'm not going to have a chance to take a look too much more in the live chat today, but I see a lot of comments going back and forth. Cowboy and Haji and Connie. Connie says taxation is theft. There, fixed it. Of course, we know taxation is an evil tax. Get rid of it is what Gallatin is telling us. And on the other hand, we have Yellen saying taxation is the foundation of society, which is absolutely insane. One of my favorite quotes on this comes from John Taylor of Caroline, who at one point said, taxation is not liberty. But that should be obvious. Anyways, I'll look over in the live chat a little bit later today. Whether or not you're able to pitch in and support us financially with our membership program, you can also help us. Easy, free, super simple, smashing the like button, leaving reviews on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast platform. Comments in the archive help out a bunch as well. All that stuff can help trigger algorithms and tell them to show us to more people, and I really appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed the episode, whether you're watching or listening live or later on today, tomorrow, or in 5 years, whenever it happens to be. I hope you enjoyed the episode. I hope it made you think. I hope you learned something, and I hope to see you next time here on the Path to Liberty.